many years ago, it seems, I first met many of you here at the Prajna Temple at Dixon Street. Things were arranged much differently then. But it is nonetheless a very nostalgic experience to come back here. I did shoken with some of you here. This temple has a deep affinity with the Sydney Zen Sangha. I've been thinking about the four vows for several years, and what they mean for me, what they might mean for the Sangha, and what they mean metaphysically. They originate not in Zen, but in Tendai Buddhism, which preceded Zen slightly in the 6th or perhaps 5th century. The four vows probably were well established in all of Chinese Buddhism by the 7th century, because we find Huineng commenting on them in his Teishos. Huineng died in 714. They have their roots in earlier vows and gathas of Sanskrit Buddhism. Many teachers say that the four vows are linked to the three treasures set forth in reverse order, with the Sangha coming first. Though the many beings are numberless, I vow to save them, with the Dharma in the center, with the second two vows, though greed, hatred, and ignorance rise endlessly, I vow to cut them off. Though the Dharma is vast and fathomless, I vow to understand it. And finally, the Buddha with the fourth line, though Buddha's way is beyond attainment, I vow to embody it fully. The difference in taking refuge in the three treasures and in reciting the four vows, it seems to me, is that the element of will is more explicit in the recitation of the four vows. And excuse me, please, would everybody sit comfortably? I didn't mean to. demand rigor here. I want to emphasize this matter of will. It is discussed in Yasutani Roshi's introductory talks on Zen practice in Three Pillars of Zen. You know where he speaks about the three requisites of practice. And one of them is great determination. Well, one might not see will and determination as exactly the same thing. And maybe they're not. And the three requisites of Zen practice are usually used with reference to the pursuit of realization. Of course, realization includes saving all beings, correcting oneself, and understanding the Dharma. But perhaps emphasizing one aspect gives a kind of one-sided understanding of what the complete practice is and what we are saying with our four vows. The will to save all beings, the will to see clearly the emptiness of the three poisons of greed, hatred, and ignorance. The will to understand the Dharma and the will to attain the way of the Buddha. This is what we are acknowledging and vowing to activate when we say the four vows. The will to save all beings is the will to lower the barrier between myself and the other person, the other thing. It is not that I vow to love the other. It is that I vow to reach the place which has existed from the beginning, where there is no barrier at all. And I can see my own tendency to condemn, to judge, to put down in the other, when the other person speaks or acts in such a way. There I go again, one can say. I am large, I contain multitudes, you know, as Whitman said. The second vow is not so much to cut off greed, hatred, and ignorance, any more than Mumon's comment that when you meet the Buddha, you should kill the Buddha. You meet the Dharma, you should kill the Dharma. That this should be taken literally. Understand that greed, hatred, and ignorance are really delusions, most ephemeral kinds of delusion that have no basis at all, no substance at all. I was reading Stephen Levine's interesting book on his work as a death and dying counselor the other day, where he suggests in one of his case studies that his client not gold plate his garbage. Don't gold plate your garbage. I try to tell people in Doksan, you don't need to be victimized by your what you look at as your past karma. Thich Nhat Hanh says, you can switch yourself like a TV set. Now angry, now serene, now sad, now serene. What is there really to be called anger? It's not to deny that you don't feel this emotion. Any more than one can deny the movement of air we call a typhoon. It can be very destructive. But it is very airy. One must acknowledge the typhoon and lie low, tie down. So one must acknowledge anger. It doesn't do any good, however, to ask where the typhoon comes from. It's like the old story that the Buddha told. When a person is shot with an arrow, you know, no need to ask where the arrow came from, or whether it was sharp or dull, and all of those things. Acknowledging one's condition is enough. Attaining the way of the Buddha and understanding the vast and fathomless Dharma is a matter of seeing clearly that the five skandhas are empty, the five perceptions, the four perceptions and things perceived are completely empty, without any substance at all. And with that emptiness, we find peace. With that emptiness, we find serenity. Sometimes in session, one can sit through a long cycle of paranoid anger. And when it is past, it is like awakening from a bad dream. And you wonder, what was that about? Yes. These little experiences of recognizing the ephemerality of emotions are milestones in the practice. And the next time that one of those paranoid cycles comes up, it becomes easier to acknowledge that there is no substance there at all. And when there is a good chance, from that empty place, from that serene, peaceful place, one can say, to the person who prompted that anger, or to whom you hung your, on whom you hung your anger, I didn't understand why you said such a thing, or why you did such a thing. and open up for dialogue and listen. This is not a spiritual prostitution. There are times when your own integrity will not permit you to go along with a person or a situation. Sulak Sivaraksha, who is the Thai Gandhian community organizer who organizes slum dwellers and fishermen, farmers, and women, conducts literacy programs not only in his native Thailand but in an international Southeast Asian organization, said to me, "There are lots of people I can't deal with." Yes. But I have not seen him in a situation where he couldn't deal appropriately, because one senses his heart is pure. So that second vow is about purity of heart, serenity of mind. And the third vow, I think, is about poetry. Though the Dharma is vast and fathomless, I vow to understand it. Where the Dharma, so called, is not poetical, where it doesn't require a skip or a jump, a spark from pole to pole, then I think it's not Dharma. It's boring. It's not challenging. There's a lot of so-called Dharma that is terribly boring. I feel the acid test is whether or not it is funny. You know the story of Basso and Hyakujo when they took a walk. A wild duck flew up, and Basso said, "What was that?" And Hyakujo said, "A wild duck." Basso said, "Where did it go?" Hyakujo said, "It flew away." So Basso laid hold of Hyakujo's nose and gave it a twist. Hyakujo cried out in pain. "Why," said Basso, "it didn't fly away at all." If you try to analyze that story, you destroy it. A koan is not a joke, but it has something in common with a joke, in that when it is explained, it is destroyed. If there isn't a skip, a jump in the understanding, then it is dry as dust. Nothing happens. When Hyakujo went back to the monastery after this incident, a monk found him in his room laughing and said, "Why are you laughing?" So Hyakujo said, "Go and ask Basso." So the monk went to Basso and said, "Hyakujo is down in his room laughing. And when I went to ask him why, he said to ask you." So Basso said, "I don't know. You have to find out from Hyakujo." So the monk went back to Hyakujo and found him weeping. So he said, "A while ago you were laughing, and now you are weeping. Why is that?" Hyakujo said, "A while ago I was laughing, and now I am weeping." Yes. That's the explanation that is appropriate for the Zen student, it seems to me. Suppose that Hyakujo, when his nose was twisted like that, had been overwhelmed with anger at his teacher treating him in such a rough way. And he had said, "Oh, now I am angry at my teacher. I should ask him why he abuses me like this." The chance for realizing where that duck was would be gone. So, it is the poetical path, the objectification of the situations to a degree where truth is paramount. That is really our practice. Truth and compassion are the same thing. The other is not separate from myself. I suffer with others. This is truth. So if one really practices with a will, then there is no danger of falling into corruption. The danger in Zen practice comes when someone without the will learns the knack. Using only a part of himself or herself. And finally, the fourth vow to embody the Buddha's way, to embody the Buddha Tao. Tao means practice. Practice in order to, and the act itself. The Buddha behind me is flanked by Kanzeon. To his left, shown or presented holding a lotus flower. In female form. In what is really a teaching mudra, in this case. Although in front of her, there is a small kanon or kuan yin with a thousand arms. Here, with that such a small figure, the full thousand couldn't be shown, but that's the representation of the thousand arms kanon, each one holding a device, like a pen or a pot, or a thunderbolt, or whatever, some instrument of compassion. Kanzeon is the one who hears the sounds of the suffering of the world and is one with those sounds. And on the other side, is Samantabhadra, the great action bodhisattva, shown in male form. These two, male and female, compassionate and active, are one in the Buddha and in the Buddha's practice. And I vow to embody that Tao, that way.